This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This story has multiple parts. To listen to the entire story in one place, visit talltaletv.com/series. Of Portals and Portents by Leslie Herron. Chapter 11, Alum.
So there we were.
Atlas opened his palms to portray suspense and mysticism.
Facing down a horde of murder machines. 100 of them at least.
He went dewy-eyed and wistful.
But in a blaze of glory, cannon fire, harpoons, and a whirlwind of magic, we fought our way free.
Sparks erupted from his fingertips as he clapped his hands together.
Or so we thought. A woman mad with desire for yours truly had latched onto the ship. But thanks to my stunning good looks, quick wit, and silver tongue, I convinced her our love was not to be, and we managed to escape unscathed.
Elias swallowed the lump in his throat, hoping his expression wouldn't betray his utter disbelief in the tall tale the Arcanist had spent the last hour weaving. He opened and closed his mouth several times before turning to his bodyguard.
Was any of that true?
Rolling his eyes, Tragedy shook his head and crossed his arms over his chest.
The important bits are true, more or less. That is, if you strip out all the heroic deeds and replace them with idiotic blunders. We were lucky to make it out with the ship at all. No respect for the lost art of storytelling.
Atlas threw his hands up in the air and let out a wail of frustration.
Ugh, of course none of it actually happened that way. All good sagas require the occasional fib. It's called showmanship. I think you mean showboating, you ponce.
Atlas's face twitched and purple sparks danced around his fingertips.
I'll give you showboating, you albino meatball.
Elias pinched the bridge of his nose as the two men began bickering back and forth. He and his wife had put off having children for a reason, but here he was overseeing a group of toddlers. Just as their squabbling turned physical, they were caught off guard by the cries of aggravation that can only come from a man fighting with a one-ton animal.
Can I get some help? Please!
They turned to see the doctor struggling to convince Barry onto a set of rickety wooden steps that led up to the water tower where their recently pilfered airship was tethered, being the only structure tall enough in the tiny town. Eric threw his weight into the bear, his fingers clamped tight around handfuls of fur.
Come on! You have to get...
Barry reached out with a trembling paw, ready to continue upwards against his better judgment, when the whole staircase vibrated angrily, threatening to plunge the two of them back to the earth. He dropped his body, tucking his head beneath his paws and hiding his face. Here was another thing that Eric's beloved textbooks had failed to cover, what being sat on by a bear felt like. The very air was squeezed from his lungs, and he began slapping wildly at anything he could reach.
Get off!
Atlas heaved a sigh and sauntered off towards his friends.
He's afraid of heights.
It only took Barry a moment to realize his mistake before he clambered off the doctor and backpedaled down the stairs, murmuring grunts of apology. Eric wheezed in lungfuls of air, prodding around to make sure his ribs weren't broken.
You couldn't have mentioned that before we stole a flying ship? Oi, don't get your trousers all knotted. You just have to blindfold him, obviously.
Before reaching the base of the water tower, Atlas shot a finger back at the bodyguard.
We ain't done, Rockman.
Definitely not ready for children, Elias thought as he continued to massage his temple. He turned back to Tragedy.
Anything else to report before we take off?
I didn't say anything with the mage there, but there is something of concern.
The pale man reached into the front pocket of his shirt and produced a water-damaged pamphlet, offering it to the king.
I picked this up out of the gutter. There was also a few plastered on some of the buildings.
Scanning the paper, Elias thumbed away some dirt to reveal a familiar symbol. His eyes shot up.
The Brotherhood?
No.
Tragedy shook his head.
At least, not the same branch. I think when Chester took power, he reopened the churches.
With a slight tremor in his hand, Elias read the faded text.
Whether you seek help, counsel, or something greater, the illuminated path welcomes all.
He had thought this sect to be eradicated. Clearly, he had not tried hard enough during his time as High Inquisitor.
Your father has been busy then.
Tragedy folded his arms over his chest, but held his tongue.
From what I could see, they appeared harmless. They were just helping the displaced with rescue efforts and whatnot. However...
Elias raised a brow.
However?
I can't be certain.
He exhaled slowly.
But as we fled, I saw a group of monks engaging with the Prime Minister. Their attire looked more like that of the Brotherhood than this illuminated path.
Elias cursed as his fingers crumpled the pamphlet into a ball.
How did they reach Avis so quickly? I thought we would have had more time.
Sir?
Aware of the pain in his hand, Elias relaxed his fingers, and the crumpled wad of paper fell to the ground.
I'm sorry, but I need to ask you to stay.
Tragedy shook his head.
I think I should remain by your side.
I would not ask this of you if it weren't dire.
Elias flicked a gaze over to his twin, who, with the help of the Arcanist, had almost successfully coaxed the bear on board. He returned his attention to his bodyguard.
There's no one else I can trust. I need you to find a weak point in the city, where their fortifications are thinnest. And if you can, sow discord to buy me time.
Fortifications? You make it sound as though you expect a war.
Tragedy shifted uncomfortably.
Not if it can be helped. If the Brotherhood gains a foothold in Avis, they will have the means to overthrow all of Ebra and the Enshrined Wilds beyond. Our only hope is to occupy the city faster than they do.
Elias cast his gaze down at the pamphlet lying in the muddy puddle.
I can't afford to lose any more people. Please.
With an uneasy frown, Tragedy nodded slowly.
And what of you?
Don't worry about me. I have an Arcanist, a bear, and a semi-useful Shadow Mage on my side.
There was a tickle of laughter somewhere deep inside Elias's mind.
Just keep an eye out towards the river for my return.
He pulled his hand away, gave the other man a knowing look, and hurried across the muddy street to join his companions aboard the ship. Even with only 3 men and 1 cowering bear, it took little time to prepare the vessel for flight. Through use of extensive automation, its design was simple enough that a single individual could pilot the craft, freeing any excess soldiers for combat. While Elias had not been lead mechanist on the project, he had contributed more than enough to know the basics of its operation. Simple enough that even a showboating Arcanist could fly it. Keeping private his doubts about Atlas's ability to manage anything more complicated than a wine glass, Eric pulled away from the others and crossed the deck towards the bow of the ship.
Hey, Wraith, want to see something cool?
A smile pulled at his face.
What do you mean, cool?
Timing his actions with the movements of the ship, Eric thrust himself over the side of the railing, keeping a firm grip on it. He watched, the grin on his face widening as the earth below them rushed away. Vertigo tickled his senses as adrenaline caused his stomach to flop with excitement. For the first time in what felt like months, he belted out genuine laughter.
Are you crazy? Get back in the boat!
Pulling himself into an upright position, Eric's laughter faded to a chuckle.
I guess the bear isn't the only one scared of heights.
I can control your body. Don't make me make you slap yourself.
There was a hint of laughter in the Shadowbug's words, and Eric knew he wasn't serious. The grin never faded from his face as he leaned against the glittering brass handrails. Hailing from a world where technology had advanced well beyond dirigibles and blimps, flying was not a new experience for him. But as the world expanded beneath him like a great map, the wind whipping through his hair, there was no denying that primitive airships held a certain appeal. As he stared down into the great green carpet below, his eyes moving in the direction of Avis, he had hoped that from a higher vantage point the damage to the city would prove less extensive than previously thought. The grin faded slowly from his face. If anything, it was worse than they had feared. Much of the destruction had been caused by the displacement of water. Debris from the floating plate and submerged buildings had overflowed the river's banks and flooded much of the city and even forests on either side. Twisted and tangled chunks of metal and stone had caused such irreparable damage to the River Teviot that even its flow had changed. New branches spiraled out, disappearing beneath the dark canopy of forest and drowning large swaths of once dry land. Guilt weighed heavy in his heart as Eric looked beyond the city. The higher they rose, the farther he could see, and there was no end to the overlapping landscapes. Farmland inserted into forests, mountains jutting out of once flat land, and buildings teetering on the edge of the river and lakes. What had they done?
The university appears intact.
Eric turned to see the king standing at the railing behind him, staring down at the city with a contemplative look.
The university?
He threw his hands out, gesturing wildly about their surroundings.
Who cares about the university? How can you stand there so calm, like we didn't just kill all these people?
You didn't do this.
Elias let out a heavy sigh.
Death has always played a center stage in my life. War, family, even my own near demise. It isn't that I don't care. I do. But what would coming unhinged do for them?
He cast a wave towards the edge of the ship.
As you said, why should I spiral into despair when we could do something about it?
The two aren't exclusive. It should upset you, because all of this could have been prevented by you not lying to me.
I may not have told you the extent of my plan, but I have never lied to you, nor will I ever. That's a garbage excuse, and you know it. If you had told me, I would have helped.
Elias stepped away from the edge of the ship and turned to face him.
You're right. I've had such little faith in my own siblings that I failed to put my trust in you, and you've proven yourself time and time again.
He walked gracefully across the deck as his hair lashed about his face.
But no one, not even you, could regret this course of action more than I do. Those were my people, and they did not deserve this.
He turned back to his twin.
I swear, here and now, I will no longer keep you in the dark.
Why does it feel like there's a but coming?
Eric shied away as the king paced towards him.
The Brotherhood has arrived in Avis.
Elias sighed, his attention shifting to a large bird coasting in their wake beside the ship.
I take it you understand the implications of this.
Eric froze. Having seen their use of technology in the past, he knew the only thing that hindered them was their limited supply. If the Brotherhood were to capture a city like Avis...
The university?
It is nearly intact, and the local government is welcoming them with open arms.
Elias returned to the railing, placing his hands on the gilded metal. He looked down below once more, and this time a sharp pain of regret stabbed at his insides.
In trying to save two worlds, I may have doomed both.
Despite the devastation below, Elias couldn't help enjoy the brief moment of solitude he found among the clouds. The silence was heavy between himself and his twin, but there was a cool breeze on the air and the sound of birds calling to one another as they played in the wake of their ship like dolphins. He remained in the moment, calming his soul with the beauty around him, before he found his words.
I do have a plan, and this time I will tell you everything.
Okay.
Eric hated the way the king could appear so calm and composed.
What is it?
Just beyond the docks of Still Harbor lies the Selkie Isles. Once their king provided me with the means to quell the Brotherhood's uprising,
Perhaps we could beseech him to do so again.
Elias put up his hands, stopping the incoming argument he knew was coming.
I know, but they would be soldiers that could arrive in Avis by river, faster than any of mine could achieve by land.
Eric grit his teeth.
The source of the troops wasn't my issue. I understand the need to stop the Brotherhood, but we should be focused on helping people, not killing more. And what better way to help a city underwater than with an army that bends the tides to their will? Beyond the task of removing the threat, they would be the perfect force to aid Avis, well beyond anything you and I could achieve alone.
Eric wanted to scream, but Elias made a point. More hands to help in the rescue and relief efforts could never be a bad thing, right? And he had to admit, a Brotherhood with the means of mass manufacturing high-tech weaponry was terrifying.
Fine. We can make your detour, but only after we stop at Still Harbor.
What's in Still Harbor?
A tracking mage?
Baffled by the king's blank stare, Eric gestured with an aimless thrust of his hands.
So we can locate my brother? And your wife?
Elias blinked in surprise. The reemergence of the Brotherhood within his borders had occluded everything else, even causing his wife's safety and whereabouts to completely slip his mind. He let out a choked cough.
Oh, yes, of course. Pyra.
Tragedy skirted across the open street until he pressed himself up against what was left of a crumbling brick wall several blocks away from the commotion. From this vantage point, crouching behind the rubble and hidden from sight, he observed men and women donned in white robes as they rushed about. They were handing out food, administering aid, providing blankets, or simply a shoulder to cry on. In the center of it all was a woman, shouting orders and instructing the homeless where they would sleep that night. Danny looked haggard, like a thin piece of rope frayed to near breaking. He slumped to the ground, resting his back against the wall as he cradled his injured arm close to his chest. The pain grew ever deeper, resonating from within his bones. He pulled back his sleeve to reveal the wound was getting worse. Smaller crystals of purple stone stippled his skin around the first one. Tragedy shoved his shirt back over his arm. This was hardly worthy of his concern at the moment. His orders had been to prepare for an invasion, an occupation by military soldiers even. But perhaps there was another way. Elias was a great man, no doubt, but even he had blind spots. And the Brotherhood was one such obsession that always led to violence. Not that Tragedy minded the violence. He was very good at it, after all. But his sister had always been the more level-headed one, helping steer the king and even himself away from conflict in situations like these. He let out a sad sigh as he looked down at his hands. He had missed her influence over the last few years. But maybe it was that he simply missed her. With a grunt, Tragedy pushed himself back up and peered around the rubble once more. Danny was gone, replaced by a young man in white robes. Good, he thought. That probably meant she was off to get some sleep. Now he could track her down and confront her alone. He just had to... No, he needed to speak to her. All thoughts of a friendly and even warm reunion were launched from his brain as something hard slammed into his back like a battering ram. His body exploded through the crumbling wall, and he landed face down in the resulting debris. Before he could roll over to glimpse his attacker, he felt a knee press into his lower spine, and an impossibly strong grip grabbed his good arm, cranking it painfully backwards.
Danielle!
Tragedy spat out a mouthful of dust and raised his free hand in surrender.
I'm not here to fight.
It's Danny, and we both know you'd lose.
She twisted his arm a touch harder, eliciting a pained hiss from her brother and a frantic nod. After he blurted out her correct name, she released his arm, standing back. A thought occurred to her, and she gave him a reprimanding smack on the back of his head.
I thought you'd left.
He could hear the hurt in her voice as he rolled over into a sitting position. He opened his mouth to respond, but nothing came out. What could he say? That he was sorry? That he forgave her for choosing their father over him? Neither was true. Deciding against starting this reunion on a lie, Tragedy stared up at her with a crooked grin on his face.
I've missed you.
A gentle smile tugged at the corners of her mouth as she sat down beside him.
Of course you did. You always were the more emotional one.
He chuckled, and she leaned into him, resting her shoulder against his. He couldn't remember the last time they had simply enjoyed each other's company. And for a long moment, the two sat in comfortable silence, the act speaking more to one another than any word of apology could do. They may have been on opposite sides of a conflict, but at the heart of it all, they were still family. Danny broke the silence first.
I told Father I could reach you.
Tragedy frowned and pulled away slightly.
I just came to warn you not to trust these religious zealots.
She felt the shift in his demeanor, but didn't press.
Zealots?
The Brotherhood. You know as well as I do what Elias told us about them and why he stamped out the churches in Avis. Our father, however, seems to be more than willing to jump into bed with them, and you are letting him.
She tilted her head.
The High Inquisitor told us many things, dear brother. The Illuminated Path was never the boogeyman Elias made them out to be, even before he took power. Why should I believe his stories of the Brotherhood or anything more? Of the two, who has done the damage you see around you? This new church has only offered to help fix what has happened.
He stood.
And if you're wrong?
We've had our differences, Theo, on lots of things. Mother, father, even the state of Avis before. But I can assure you that Chester, our father, would not blindly align himself with people you would label as villainous. They may be opposed to Elias, but that does not make them any more evil than I am. Come with me and see for yourself.
Tragedy stared at her for a long second. His insides churned with conflicting emotions. Part of him wanted her to be right, if only to have her back by his side. The other part knew she had been blinded by their opulent promises.
If you don't believe in our father, then have faith in me. You trusted me once before.
She extended her hand.
Besides, we both know I am the smart one.
Her playful smirk pulled at the ache in his heart. His hand reached out and grabbed hers. Tragedy knew she was wrong, but he needed his sister back. Somehow, he would find a way to convince her of the truth. But as he helped her to her feet, he noticed her wince in pain.
Are you okay?
Yes, Danny nodded. It's just my shoulder. I dislocated it earlier, and then your friend in the floppy hat burned me with that fire spell?
She pulled back the collar of her shirt to expose the injury. Tragedy felt his body go rigid as his blood turned cold, his heart slamming against his ribcage. While the skin was red and irritated, it was not blistered or bleeding. But in the light of the afternoon sun, he could see several grains of orange, shimmering stone embedded in the flesh of her shoulder. Danny let her shirt go, covering the wound again, and waved off her brother's concerned look.
It's nothing a few nights' rest won't fix.
He took a step back, glancing back over toward the monks in white still scurried about.
I shouldn't have come.
Tragedy's voice was distant and cold as he focused on another round of homeless, accepting help from the Illuminated Path.
Theo?
Danny reached out, but he jerked away from her touch.
I'll have to go.
He turned and fled, doing his best to ignore the pleas that followed him.
Chester, Elias, the Brotherhood, it could all wait.
His hand went to his own wounded arm. Whatever was happening to him, he was willing to suffer in silence. but he had now brought it upon his sister. How debilitating was this disease, or was it a curse? Whatever it was, the Arcanist knew more than he was saying, but he was out of reach now. No, if he wanted answers, there was only one man that could help him. He had to get back to the Infinite Tower. We thank you for joining us for this chapter of the novel Of Portals and Portents, Book 4 by Leslie Herron, in this ongoing series available here on Tall Tale TV. You can find links in the description to where you can listen to all her books and novellas, with new chapters appearing as they are being written and recorded.
Oh, I'll show you showboating, you albino meatball! Better a meatball than a cut-rate party magician! Arcanist! Keep it up, Blondie, and I'll show you my Make the Idiot Disappear act! Oh, planning on leaving already? Let me guess, you got another bimbo to go disappoint? Hey! That's a horrible way to talk about your sister! Oh, gee, that's it. Come here. Bring it, Pebble Brain. I don't think so. Oh, you like that, do you? Stop squirming. Sleep spell.
Seriously?
Ow.
This is gonna be a long trip, isn't it?
Come here, you. Did you just bite me?